Abby needed to take another stab at Jethro Turner. Maureen's wine was giving her courage. Nothing to lose. She dialed. He answered so quickly she wondered if he'd been waiting for her call.
Abby.
She caught herself before addressing him with the formal Mr. After all, he'd told her to drop it. Jethro, I was wondering, would you reconsider discussing the Dufresne case?
I thought about it, Abby. I did. And I still don't think any good is going to come of this story.
How could a fresh look at a dark episode in the history of Hunt's Landing not be good? Abby asked. It's our home, for good or for bad. Our story. He didn't answer right away, and she scrambled for another approach. Pushy, pushy. If not for the history, then would you do it to help the daughter of a friend, one who needs a break?
Yeah, that really came out of your mouth, Abigail.
Well, I don't suppose you could do much harm now, even if you played dirty pool with an old man.
An appropriate amount of guilt knocked on her head.
Tell you what, Jethro said. Down on the river, west side of the parkway, is Walker's boat launch. I'll meet you at 2:00.
Wednesday, 1:59 p.m., Walker's launch. The street originally called Andrew Jackson Road, later turned to Parkway, was named so by the town's founders in an attempt to curry favor with the newly elected President Jackson. Abby's first grade teacher had gone to great lengths to explain how General Jackson had, in 1813, retreated from Natchez in defeat, marching his battle-weary soldiers through the hamlets of Hunt's Landing, where the villagers greeted the troops with cheers and refreshments. Abby, the historian, knew better. Jackson's retreat was marked by Natchez Trace, far west of Hunt's Landing. Still, the name stuck. Abby turned off the parkway at the foot of Memorial Bridge, onto the service road that ended at the boat launch. The parking lot was almost vacant, save for one Chevy Tahoe hitched to an empty trailer and a muddied green Ford F-150 parked in the shade. She pulled up next to the pickup as Jethro Turner exited his vehicle. The last time she'd seen him, in high school, he was still a Hunt's Landing cop. Now retired, Jethro was both the same as she remembered and different. His lanky body seemed the same, if a little thicker around the middle, and the silver hair was new. His face had the freckled and leathery look of someone who spent a lot of time outdoors. He extended a hand.
Little Abby Adams, all grown up.
Jethro, she shook his hand, the feeling of awkwardness fading as she recalled wearing his police hat on piggyback rides 30 years ago. Letting go of her hand, he got straight to his point.
Before we get started, why don't you tell me how you picked this case for your story?
She bristled. I didn't. The editor of the Times did. Jethro studied her, arms crossed, face drawn. She wondered what he'd meant regarding the harm he thought she might cause. After another moment, he smiled.
All right, we'll start here.
He cocked his head at the bridge. From their vantage point, she could see the paved pedestrian path from the boat launch eastward, under the bridge, toward the college on the other side.
In 69, all this was woods. Used to be part of the Myers plantation.
But now it's Myers Wildlife Refuge land, right? The plantation used to take up most of the land west of what is now Andrew Jackson Parkway. But the family couldn't keep up with the property taxes, so they wound up selling a parcel to the Army, another parcel to the college, and donating the tracts closest to the river to the state as a wildlife refuge.
Yep. Kids from the college use these woods to do whatever kids do. We didn't patrol the place regularly.
He turned east.
Those tall buildings over there?
The river dorms? The dormitories stood along the southern edge of the quad,
next to the Tennessee River.
Those weren't there in 69. Some old oaks stood there, like the ones in the middle of the quad now. That's important, because that's where the party was.